Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Popmatic podcast. This is April's edition. I'm Brian, and with me today is...
Amanda.
Jesse.
For now.
Bill.
Lisa.
And...
Liz.
And Liz, what do you do here at the library?
I work in the reference division.
Come on.
She runs the reference division.
And I do art stuff, the galleries, Wilson Collection special limited edition club books.
You're a great librarian, and I've always admired your programs. You're really humble. But when I think about, like, models of, like, man, who does these awesome programs that I wish that I could do, I always think of you. But then I felt guilty because I thought about Crystal, too. Crystal pretty much always does awesome programs, too, in the same way, and is always really humble about it.
She's not here, so.
Yeah, but she's not here, so I just, you know, you guys are great. But Liz is with us today to talk about 1Q84, but we'll get to that a little bit later. So when this posts, it'll probably be around April 1st, and that's appropriate because this podcast is a joke. Oh, that's bad. I usually save those one-liners for Jesse, but Jesse has some news.
I'm having a baby.
Oh. I'm pregnant.
That's going to hurt.
I know you've been showing.
It's been gestating for 20 years now. No, I'm moving to the Hermitage branch, so I won't be able to take the time to come and do these podcasts.
We'll just Skype you in.
You won't be able to record here in our secret space fortress.
Yeah. I lose my access to the secret underground room.
Well, if you leave Torchwood, we evaporate your memory. Just so you know, that's how that works. So... yeah, I usually save those one-liners for Jesse. Now, if you're listening and you're sad, you know, and you're someone who's actually listening who doesn't normally participate in the podcast, I don't know, maybe you should volunteer for the library if you like, if you like the library so much. It's a good idea. I'm serious. As long as you're not a criminal, you know, hey, you know, come on down. We like that. But normally, this is the part where Jesse would say what's happening later at the library. Do you know what's happening at the library?
In April?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Community of Many Faces is going to start, and there are so many events that we can't mention them all.
Well, there's a whole book to go along with that.
Yeah.
Tell you what's going on.
Even though I can't remember all the many events that are happening all over the library system, if you go to your branch, there will be a book.
Branches like Hermitage.
And you can see me in person.
Yeah, if you're someone who uses the Hermitage branch and listens to the podcast...
this is your best day ever.
Yeah, you can ask Jesse for the Community of Many Faces book, and he'll hand it to you. It'll be great.
And I'll smile. What else is going on in April?
That's all I got.
Is no movies so many in Maine?
That I don't know. Right?
No.
Yeah. Wait, you said no, and I said yeah.
In May... we're showing Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid.
So, no.
And we have a great interview with Philip Kaufman, but that's upcoming.
The second part of the songwriters workshop taking place in May.
May's going to be a great month.
We're forward to May already, man.
We're doing some Tai Chi in the courtyard.
Tai Chi in the courtyard. That's a beautiful place to do Tai Chi. Yep. Do you know what day that is?
I think that's Saturday, April 21st, if that's a Saturday.
Okay, so we're going to discuss Haruki Murakami's 1Q84, and I think when it was published, I guess it was actually last year when it was published.
October.
But yeah, it still feels like this year to me. Worldwide literary event, right? Couldn't get it translated from English fast enough. Japan's most famous author, bestseller, even though he's literary, that kind of thing. Book you had to read. Really long, so, I mean, reviewing it now or discussing it now, but it was really long. You know, you got to sit with it a while, and that's kind of one of the things that maybe it's about. Of course, there's going to be spoilers. Jesse told me that there would be spoilers. He said there had to be spoilers on his last show.
But I love spoilers.
I think, too, I mean, it's just at this point, you know, this is the kind of novel that really, I mean, I don't think if you know the ending or the spoilers, it's really going to ruin it for you. You know, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you, well, do you disagree?
Oh, I feel like it could go a lot of different ways. I kind of wouldn't have wanted to know, but I did, but anyway.
But even, well, okay. I guess I'm thinking it's been like sort of out for so long if you were super duper hot on reading
That's true.
It, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. But okay. So they challenged me to summarize this book in less than 10 sentences. It's 1,000 pages, super complicated, right? I'm going to go for it. Al-Mami is an assassin that kills men guilty of spousal abuse. And Tango is a math teacher and amateur fiction writer who gets convinced into rewriting a fantasy novel called Air Chrysalis by a 17-year-old girl named Fuka Eri. So after a successful assassination, Al-Mami finds herself stuck in an alternative universe where there are two moons. And actually, that's a little bit chronologically wrong, but that's okay. After rewriting Air Chrysalis, Tango finds himself in the same universe, okay? Now, later you learn that Al-Mami and Tango actually shared this really tender moment when they were in elementary school when they were 10. But since then, they've been totally apart, but they've pined for each other and loved one another secretly, even though they haven't seen each other since they were kids.
That's probably about
counting. I know, I'm like, great. Anything that comes after that's what my ears.
Fuka Eri is actually a runaway from a religious cult, and when the cult finds out that she revealed or maybe revealed some secrets in her book Air Chrysalis, they are really mad. Then Al-Mami is commissioned to assassinate the leader of the cult, which she does. And then the cult hires an extremely unattractive and unlikable private investigator, Ushikawa, to find out who killed the leader. And then when he investigates, he realizes the connection between Tango and Al-Mami, and he gets sucked into the world with two moons too. So then the big tension is the book is, what is the world with two moons? Will Tango and Al-Mami actually find each other? Will the private investigator sort of turn them in, and will the cult kill them? Right? And it stretches over a long time. And there are a lot more characters and a lot more things happen. And I'll probably, if we start talking about a character or a scenario, I'll just try to sort of interject with who those people are and what they're about. So I guess the first thing is, did you find Al-Mami and Tango's love convincing?
Well, it ended up being kind of convenient. And I have to start this by saying that I only got through half of the second book. But if I were in Japan when it first came out, that means that I'd be doing okay, I guess. Like, because they came out, like, you know, with spaces in between. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought it kind of got sprung where I was halfway through the first book going, oh, okay, so it's all going to tie together at the end. But then I still had two more books to get through. So I was confused as to why they put that together right there. But again, I haven't finished it, so I'll reserve judgment.
I will say, I liked both of those characters. I liked Tango, and I liked Al-Mami. So I'm not sure that I buy the whole pining for each other and not seeing each other for, whatever, 20 years or whatever. I mean, because they lived completely separate lives. They both, you know, had other people that they were seeing. But this one love was, like, the love, and I'm not sure I necessarily buy that aspect of it. But I did like both of them, and I was glad they got together. Spoiler alert.
Me too.
That's an okay spoiler. I'm good with that.
Yeah, that's a happy ending spoiler alert. So.
I feel like their relationship really built, even though they were separate during this story, mm-hmm. and their childhoods and the kind of the loneliness of it, kind of both those storylines, you know, obviously it's a book, but progressed during the story. And it's like, it's kind of like they got in touch with their loneliness, I guess a lot actually in the story. And so that part of it made it believable to me. Mm-hmm. Also, don't you think all of his characters are likable? Like, really, even the, like, bad characters are likable, too?
Yeah, I didn't like the Ushikawa, is that his name?
Ushikawa was the
detective.
Yeah.
He bugged me. And I don't know if it was because he was a little bit too mercenary for me, that he was, you know, trying to... He was smart, I appreciated that. Like, he really did know what he was doing, but...
Is he the one that shows up with the false, like, scholarship?
Yeah, with the scholarship for Tango, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got that far.
Yes,
I know that.
I think it's, at first, anyway, it's very intentional that Ushikawa is dislikable, right? Mm-hmm. There's the idea that you don't like him. But
he's
then,
like oily.
Yeah.
When the description is dirty.
Yeah.
He's the character I related to the most. when you start book three, it switches to his point of view, and he becomes far more humane, and you realize that, you know, he's come to terms with his sort of physical disfigurement, and I mean, he becomes more relatable. And I just had this weird revelation that I never thought about before, and now I feel so stupid. But the two moons are Al-Mami and Tango, right? And then when they split apart, and then at the end, when they get back together, they come back together. And I never thought about
symbolism.
That before. I never thought about that before. You did? You got that?
No, that revealed something to me, yeah.
Go, Brian.
I love it.
That's the key to the book. I don't know what else.
Yeah,
I don't know.
What's the next
book? This book is about a lot of things. But then again, so the title is 1Q84, and number 9 in Japanese sounds like English Q, so that's what it's about. And it's actually set in 1984. And I was wondering, like, why you thought he set it in the story in 1984, and what do you think that the title means?
I figured it was a reference to the book 1984, but I don't remember really anything about that book to be able to tie it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, the only thing I remember is that the Yamami, when she went to the tumor world, it was kind of like the X variable in math, like you don't know what you're talking about, so she put in Q.
Yeah.
Probably as the Japanese play on words. That was kind of, she's like, well, I'm not in 1984, so I'm in 1Q84.
I thought the Q was for the question mark. Wasn't it 1? Maybe I'm reading.
You could be right. I don't. I mean, I just remember that she was saying that that was just how she, a placeholder for her unknown world.
Yeah.
So you don't think that it was like any relation between like George Orwell's 1984 and?
I haven't read 84 either. So
come on.
I know. I'm fired.
Well, I
three Lord of the Rings.
Dude. Well, I have to admit that I was sort of grasping at, you know, parallels, and I really couldn't see that many parallels. Other than, I can't remember the protagonist in 1984, but he's brainwashed and Winston Smith. He chooses.
Nice one.
We're gonna miss you.
You're gonna have to call in.
He chooses, to believe in the false reality, or is brainwashed in believing in that. And I guess one of the big things in 1Q84 is like, which reality is real and which isn't, and is the false reality, is it real, or is it there just because the characters believe it, or is it there because they don't believe it, or, you know, that kind of thing comes into play. But
do they ever go back to the taxi driver that has that kind of premonition in the beginning? When you go down the staircase, things might be different. It seems like from there on out, she was like doing a rabbit hole kind of thing, because things were just a little bit off from there on out. And so maybe like the seed of doubt as to what was real was planted in that first scene. This is like in the first 5 pages of the book. Definitely not a spoiler.
Well, no, but that's actually the one part of my summary where I screwed up. I said after she assassinates the first person that she assassinates, she slips into the other world, and it's actually before that assassination. Mm-hmm. She's stuck in a traffic jam, and basically the cab driver just announces to her things aren't really as they seem. They'll seem different, but really, you know.
There's only one reality.
Yeah.
But then there isn't only one reality. There's two.
And maybe more.
Yeah.
Well, I thought about it kind of like in Torchwood, where they have this weird time screw up, and then by the end of the episode of Torchwood, they fix time, and then time goes back
right
to normal.
Itself.
Yeah, and no one has any memory that there were two moons or air chrysalises or anything like that.
But, okay, because this was my question, too, is when did Tengo go into the two moon world? Because he and Fuka Eri were still writing about the air chrysalises and the little people and all that. Before was he? I mean, wasn't that before the two moon war? I mean, so that would still have been in.
I haven't heard him mention the moons yet. I don't know, but I might have missed.
He gets there eventually.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm just wondering how that Iomami is very. She got out of the cab and went down into the rabbit hole. But like, where does Tengo slip?
Is that the town with the cats? Is that part of his trip?
Yeah,
to...
that's yeah. That was creepy too.
Sounds like a scene from The Grudge. Yeah.
Okay.
See, I feel like in that particular scene, he was even going to an even, like, farther place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he was actually getting further away
right than
where he was supposed to go. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
But I guess I thought that he slipped into that world whenever he chose to rewrite Air Chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
And does anyone want to explain what an Air Chrysalis is, or what the role that the book played in the...
Well, Air Chrysalis is like this magic cocoon that the little people, these are like, I don't know how you describe them. There's little people, capital L, capital P, and they kind of live on this compound where Fuka Eri grew up, and they come out at night out of things that are usually dead, and like they build these air chrysalises, which are like cocoons for these, I can't remember, like magic people. I can't remember, like there's the Dota and the Mata.
Everyone is totally confused right now.
I did such a good job.
Well, no, I think this is like every Murakami book. It's like, well, what is it about?
Mm-hmm.
Impossible.
No,
it's impossible, right? You can't really explain what they're about.
I have to say, like, having no idea what you guys are talking about, I'm intrigued and repulsed at the same time.
Awesome.
Which I think is appropriate.
The little people only come out of one dead goat. And the rest of the time, they come out of a little girl who's lady murdered in a sex ritual. I mean, it's no big deal.
Well, don't they come out of
yeah, his dad? Yeah, and then his dad when he goes see his dad, that's when he sees Aomami as a little girl at the nursing home where he's at.
His father becomes Air Chrysalis on the bed.
I thought he was gone. I thought they had taken him to another room, and then
it was in his impressions.
It was in his room. Yeah, it was where his room was.
So there must have been, if there was Air Chrysalis, there must have been little people there.
Yeah, that's the implication.
But not Big Brother.
Little people, but no Big Brother. That's brilliant.
But the little, do you think the little people, well, this is an interesting question. Or the, maybe. Well, I think it's interesting. Do you think the little people are like good or evil?
They're creepy.
Are they neutral?
Yeah. What is it that they said all the time? Do you remember? Like there was always that.
The one of the little people when they were making the Air Chrysalis would say, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, 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 right. Yes. I'm just like, ho, ho, ho. You're creepy.
Well, it's funny how it was set up like they weren't going to appear, and then they did. I remember when I read the chapter where they actually came out of the little girl, I was like, what do you mean? Because I thought that was part of, like, this fairy tale of the dead goat and the compound. But then when they actually showed up, I was like, oh, okay, we're going somewhere else.
More comedy I've read, too, that's what it is like, this isn't something that's going to happen. Oh, wait, no, it really is happening right now.
Yeah.
I think, too, like, the missing piece of the confusion puzzle is that Fuka Eri writes this book called Air Chrysalis, and she talks about the little people and what they are and how they work, right? But then after Tango rewrites the book and the book becomes real popular and everyone in Japan reads it, like, people actually sort of get transported into that world where the little people are. And what the little people do is they make air chrysalises, which to me just seemed like, you know, like fiberglass egg. But, you know, and then things would emerge like little small human beings, but not real people, like half people or clone people. Like always the like science fiction people. Idea that yeah. if you try to clone someone, there's like they're just always not a little not really quite right. So.
But did you guys get that? And maybe I made this up, that Fuka Eri was the Dota and Aomami was the Mata. Did you go there at all?
I didn't think they were each other's Dota and Mata, but I thought that there was a Fuka Eri being Dota was definitely a possibility.
Well, I just thought because of the whole impregnation of Aomami, how that happened, that I thought there had to be some kind of a... Because, you know, Fuka Eri was just so drone-like. You know, I mean, she didn't really have emotions or feel. I mean, she just kind of was there, so... That's where my head went.
She's my favorite, though, without the punctuation marks at the end of her sentences.
How
she just says everything as a statement. I thought her characterization was really good. Just I enjoyed hearing what she was going to do next. That would not be anything like what you think a 16-year-old girl would do.
She's just a matter of fact about everything. You know, this is how I am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's definitely strongly implied that she's a daughter. So that's one of the clone people that comes out of the Air Chrysalis. you know, and then, but it's never really explained why she chooses to run away from the cult, though.
See, I thought maybe that she ran, like, Aomami left, and so then that she was lost, and then so then she left.
What?
Because Aomami left, and then Fuka Eri left, because they were on that same path.
But Aomami wasn't part of the same cult, or do you think it was like a parallel universe?
She would, like, Aomami was on that, like, the hyper-religious, I can't remember the name of their thing, and so then Fuka Eri was on that compound, but...
Yeah.
Maybe I'm stretching.
Well, I mean, I think Murakami intentionally creates all that ambiguity, right?
Yeah.
But I just want to talk about, like, our favorite characters. For me, it was Tango's dad. because one of the things I think about is, like faith or really hardcore belief in things that you will to be true. And for him, it was collecting the NHK fines. Mm-hmm. So even though he's died, his ghost still, like, travels around through
people.
Giving
people a hard time about their debts.
Yeah, travels around through the ether, harassing people and about not paying their NHK fees. So it just, I just really liked his character.
It was funny because he didn't have any of the things that his son had, like the physical power or like the super intelligence, and he started from nothing. They had nothing in common, but I think it's interesting the parts where they're talking about them in like point by counterpoint, where it's like Tango did this, and Tango hated this, and his father liked this and did this. And even down to their physical, like, not resembling each other, I know turns into another plot point, but just down to him being a small man and Tango being a big man. It's just, I thought it was interesting.
I think there's the idea that Aomami and Tango don't belong to their families, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like rejects, and so like they have to be together because they don't fit anywhere else, which is really nice. But what about Ushikawa? he was the same way. Nothing really good happens to him.
It's because he isn't attractive. He smells bad. I mean, I loved how, in the way it's translated from the Japanese, it's just like, it's not like very Baroque. It's very like, he is ugly. He smells bad. His teeth were rotting. Like, it's like so, it just drives it home like 100 times.
Yeah. I liked the, and I do not remember her name, the madam that...
The dowager?
The dowager, yes. I liked her. I thought she was very tough, and plus it's always fun when you're rich and can do whatever you want with your money.
Just the dowager was the woman who enabled Al Mami to be an assassin. She was sort of like what's the guy in Charlie's Angels?
Charlie.
Yeah, there you go, right? I'm glad that you're here too. So she's like Charlie in Charlie's Angels, right? You know, and she's sort of like weirdly mystical too, because you never learn her name, you know, and she sort of knows things that she shouldn't know, and then we're like, was she just really old and wise and knows a lot about human psychology, or is she, you know?
I think she's just that wealthy, and she has the right people on payroll, and then she can take care of business. Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, she was helping women that were in bad situations, if nothing. I mean, she maybe took it about two clicks too far, but I think that was good.
So I think, like, one of the themes in the book is that Air Chrysalis maybe isn't, like, the best, like, literary novel ever written, but there's the idea that it has, like, some kind of numinous quality, and therefore people really, really relate to it, like, on some sort of, like, Joseph Campbell, like, mythology kind of way, you know, it, like, touches people. And I think for 1Q84 to work, those same plot elements that are in Air Chrysalis that are in 1Q84, like, you sort of have to relate to them in that way. Does that make sense?
We're nodding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And did it work for all of you in that way?
It didn't for me. I mean, I think that after seeing how much everybody loved all that, I mean, I didn't. It was an interesting story for me, but it didn't change my life in any way. I'm like, okay, it is what it is. What's my next book?
The whole Air Chrysalis little people subplot aspect of it, which I guess is a huge part of it, was like the tennis in Infinite Jest for me. Like, forget it. I don't care. I'm going to just, like, I'll read those parts. I'm not really paying attention. I'm just getting through it. If there are characters that, like, I'm kind of checking out what they're doing. I mean, I loved all the stuff with the moons, and I loved the romance of it. And, you know, that part was. And I loved Tomorrow, the bodyguard. I mean, there were parts of it that I loved. And then there are, like, the little people. I'm like, I totally don't get it. You know, that's just not for me. So there are aspects of it that I, you know, like, I always know the cycle of the moon and where it is and everything. So that part of it really, really spoke to me. I mean, I just love this book.
So I would say yes, even though you said no. But I think you made a good argument for yes.
What am I supposed to say now?
Well, I don't know. What are you?
I'm not done with the book.
No,
I'm still working on it.
Like, I don't know. The thing for me, too, is, like, I don't know if it necessarily, like, worked for me either. It seemed kind of forced. Like, the two moons, I just kept thinking about Dune. But I'm obsessed with Dune, so I'm biased, you know? But I think Dune is one of those novels that doesn't work. I mean, it's not really a great literary novel, but because of all this stuff about two moons and, you know, Paul has all these mystical experiences, right? I think people relate to it, like, on some kind of intuitive, non-intellectual level. And I don't know if this...
That's your Air Chrysalis.
No, I'm really kind of like...
Not even Dune.
No, as an academic film snob, I'm really interested in David Lynch's version, you know.
So he really doesn't like anything, so, podcaster.
They're really, you know... But Two Moons, I couldn't help think about Dune. But that's just me. Another thing I really wanted to touch on, too, before we run out of time, is the idea of, like, a long book and the experience of reading a long book and what that's like and if people still like to do that nowadays...
I don't understand why it was serialized in Japan and put in one volume here. And I think the author actually said something about how that was weird that they were all stuck together. Mm. So I guess, does this one really even count as one, like, extended book, or is it three books in one volume? Kind of like an omnibus.
I was just going to ask, I mean, is that typical in Japan that they would shorten them? I don't know how the
whole serialized thing.
Yeah. If
usually everything is published in, it's like five... syllables, 7 syllables, and another 5 syllables. So usually it takes years.
Because
you only read it.
Yeah.
You only read it 17 syllables at a time.
That's terrible.
Yeah. That's why we're kicking him out.
Exactly. Every Japanese listener just likes it. Not strong as
our. It's okay. You already killed half our audience by not liking Dune. So
I like Dune. Honest.
Can we rewind that tape?
But I mean, I've read really long books where it's just like, I guess the best example, the classic example, is like War and Peace. And you read it, it's just that book just totally becomes your world. Like when you read that, you know, it's just like you're totally like, it's like your personality like just meshes with the personality of the characters. And like for me, I didn't have that experience when I read this book, but.
Oh, I listened to it and read it. So I listened when I could listen and I read it on my Kindle when I could read. So to me, it really was totally absorbing. I mean, I was either most of the time doing one of those things. So for 3 weeks, I pretty much lived 1Q84, which is pretty great.
And I think that, well, I guess the words that were just about to come out of my mouth was I
get
think
a life.
I think that's the idea. I think
you can't
the idea
say
of like
this podcast.
It just shuts it down. Get a life would shut down the life support of this podcast.
Or any podcast really, but. You know, the idea of, I think, like, time passing and boredom and how you break routine, I think that's, like, part of what the book is about, mm-hmm. you know? Because the one book that's mentioned over and over is, like, Proust, you know, and Remembrance of Things Past. So that's this idea of, like, you know, you just sort of are dropped inside someone's life. But then again, the novel was serialized in 3 volumes in Japan, so I don't know, right? But the long novels that I've read that I've loved have worked that way.
Some of my favorite ones are, I mean, because if it's successful and it pulls you in, I mean, you don't want it to stop.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just that when it's long like this one, you're just like, okay, I can move on.
I just wanted to know if they ended up together. That's all I cared about.
I'm going to troll his Facebook page.
Okay, so final thoughts since we're running short on time.
The only thing I would say is that I kind of felt, I would compare this kind of to The Matrix a little bit, like, and if you look at The Matrix as a trilogy, the ending sucked because you just got back to where you, like, nothing happened. And that's how I felt about this one. Like, they end up, and they're standing there, and they're just like, I just read 950 pages, and we're back where we started. So that was what, like, I liked the first part of the book, and then, like, as we got kind of through it, it got weird, and then we were just back where we started, and then it ended. So that's why it wasn't my favorite book.
But they ended together. So that's why it was my favorite book.
I'm kind of neutral. Like, for me, it's like the love story just didn't work. It was kind of artificial. Like, for me, it's just okay, they had like 5 minutes together when they were 10. That just really isn't enough. And after being so long and so much, it was either, well, if they didn't get together, it's going to be shrugging my shoulders. And if they do get together, it's like inevitable. And also the sort of numinous symbols in the fantasy world didn't really like resonate with me. So I definitely recommend people read more Akami, but I wouldn't start with this book.
Yeah, for sure.
But the first one that I read was The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, which was another really, really long book. And all the sort of, like, weird, crazy, mystical things that happened in that book that I did relate to. And I thought about that book for months afterwards. So, just, I don't know, pick your poison. And are you, Elisa, are you going
to
keep...
I'm not encouraged to finish it by this podcast much. But,
now you know what ends.
I'm, 20 hours into the audio cassette, so I guess I just have to. I mean, what do we have now? CD audio. So I'm doing the reel to reel of.
It's 478 RPM.
In one convenient folding case. But I will probably finish it. And, come back next month and tell me what I think.
Yeah, you were right.
Yeah, you guys. I was wasting my time.
So, hey, what's tickling your fancy, Amanda?
Well, first of all, I want to just mention that yesterday morning, as soon as I turned on the TV, the first thing I heard was, boom, boom, rapido! And it was this crazy exercise video. Like, it didn't even say, like, that was just where my TV day started yesterday morning. So, if you're watching TV and you see that, you can think of us. That was exciting. But what I want to really mention is, on a totally different wavelength, Esperanza Spalding is a jazz musician. She actually won Best New Artist last year at the Grammys. in 2011, not this just past one. And she had a new album just came out here recently. She's got three out now. First one's called Esperanza. The second one is Chamber Music Society. And then Radio Music Society just came out. She's a very classic jazz. She's kind of what you wish Alicia Keys would be if she wasn't so pop. Upright bass player, went to Berklee School of Music, not Berklee out in California. And she's just a really, really classy musician. And she's actually playing with the Nashville Symphony in May. Actually, she's playing at the Skirmerhorn with her band, not the symphony. So if you're looking for a good jazz musician, Esperanza Spalding, highly recommend it.
You talked about her on our favorite stuff of the year last year, right?
I talked about her when we were doing Grammy stuff, because I think I mentioned her before. But yeah, her albums are really good. And she just had a new one. I have not heard the new one yet. So, Jesse, what's tickling your fancy?
Well, I just watched all of the first season of the new Sherlock adaptation, which is, it's only three episodes, so it's not like I just binged on it, but I would have, I guess, if I had that opportunity. But it's Sherlock, it's set in the 21st century, so it's like updated for modern times, written by Stephen Moffat, produced by him, who is a big part. He wrote all of the best episodes of the new Doctor Who updates. Like, he wrote Blink and a few of the other really awesome new Doctor Who episodes. And it's Martin Freeman plays John Watson, who was in the British remake of The Office that they did.
Ha, no. Ha, ha, ha.
That was a bad joke.
Lisa got it.
Yeah. You've been fired.
Yeah. And he was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And then the guy, his name is like Benedict Cornbatch or something like that, is the most, I don't know what his real name is. It's something ridiculous. It's Benedict Corn Wallace or something. He's got the most ridiculous name possible.
I bet he got picked on a lot.
I bet he did. But he went to a very posh school in London, so I'm sure he didn't get picked on.
They all have names like that.
They all have names like that. Okay. But he plays Sherlock as a sort of like autistic sociopath, but very likable. And it's got a like feel of maybe a CSI kind of, and the like very stylized and like words float up from the page to show you what it is that Sherlock is noticing around him. But it's done, and you know, it's better than watching CSI.
Better than the new Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr.
I would say, yeah, probably. It's not steampunk.
Like what's that?
I don't know.
Getting old. But, that's what that is.
Yeah. I mean, steampunk's so old, it's even old to hate steampunk now, right? So, but yeah, it's really entertaining. If you like Doctor Who, you probably already have watched this, so I don't need to tell you about it. But it's really entertaining. I really liked it a lot. And it's nice to see Martin Freeman and stuff, because I enjoyed him on The Office. Bill, what's up with you? What's tickling your fancy?
What tickles my fancy is a blog called Pause, Rewind, Obsess. And what is Pause, Rewind, Obsess? It is a 2012 screening diary of film critic Tim Lucas, who is the publisher of Video Watchdog magazine. In the words of Mr. Lucas, these are my initial thoughts about the films I watch shortly after I've seen them. I've watched many more films than I've actually write about for publication, so some of these notes will develop further into full-length reviews, but most will not. I've never kept a record of all the films I've screened over a course of a year, so it will be numbering each new addition to the list to keep an accurate tally. My goal is to surprise myself as much as my readers. So, I highly recommend this blog, so just Google Video Watchdog. When you get to that website, look over to the left at the blogs and click Pause, Rewind, Obsess, and oh yes, enjoy.
Video Watchdog is a really cool magazine. Do you want to tell people about it if they don't know about it?
Yes, sure. It's published now monthly, and it's done out of Cincinnati, Ohio. And as a matter of fact, Tim Lucas helped us with one of our films once. We showed Black Sabbath, and he was nice enough. We went up and met him in Bowling Green, and we videotaped a introduction. But anyway, back to the Video Watchdog magazine. He covers mainly things off the beaten track. For example, kung fu movies, yakuza gangster films from Japan, horror films, B-horror films. Does some really neat articles. Recently did a two-part article on Eddie Considine, an American actor who Well, he appeared in Alphaville, Jean-Luc Godard's film about gangsters, but he did gangsters' films in French, and it was a really neat article. So he essentially covers that, always entertaining, very colorful. It's in color now, and always entertaining, informative, and highly recommend it.
I recommend it, too. It's good, especially if you like the horror films.
So you like something, then. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I'm the kind of person that would Busted. Read Video Watchdog and maybe like one of the DVDs. Yeah. You know?
Just only on a conceptual yeah. level. Yeah.
Well, just to go back to what... Let's take like my fantasy. Actually, I started watching the BBC version of Torchwood, and it's funny. It's like I don't like Doctor Who, but I kind of like Torchwood only just because it's set in Cardiff in Wales, and sometimes there's Welsh words and Welsh street names and stuff that are actually spoken aloud. At least in the first season. In the second season, it got more popular. And then, of course, that's once you get on BBC Three, right? Then no more Welsh words.
No more time for
it. Has to be
eight syllable words yeah. that are all consonants.
It's not that bad. But
there was an A.
Yeah, so I like it for that reason too. And then I also like that my partner has all these questions about what's happening, and it's like I know stuff about the Doctor Who universe because I'm the kind of guy that does a podcast, even though I don't really like Doctor Who, but I just get to be smug and just like I know all this stuff about why certain things are happening and not. So it's fun. Torchwood, do it.
Can I say something?
Keep going.
Torchwood, if you're interested, once again, I'm plugging Xfinity On Demand, or it used to be Comcast On Demand. You can go to BBC America, click on Torchwood, and you can watch it from the beginning for free, of course, mm-hmm. if you subscribe to that. So, just wanted to mention that.
Thank you,
Comcast. Free cable.
Sure, seriously.
Well, just, you know, if we're pitching stuff, I watched Torchwood on Netflix. Streaming Netflix. It's the first TV show I've watched on streaming Netflix, and it's a surprisingly pleasant experience. The library.
You can see Sherlock on that also, but we own it on DVD at the library.
I was going to say, the library has Torchwood on DVD at the library. Or library DVD.
La Biblioteca.
Torchwood is available for checkout on DVD from the library. I didn't even say what that show's about. Does anyone want to try that?
Torchwood is the organization that started by Queen Elizabeth to be the downfall of Doctor Who, but they end up becoming this, like, his support
you
agency or something.
So much stuff.
You That's what he does. Like, why are you doing this?
You said I'm going to explain it. Like,
they're like.
I've never even seen the show. This is all I know from watching Doctor Who. So,
Torchwood is a team of investigators that deal with like paranormal stuff in the UK, and the premise is that Cardiff is on like a rift in time, so aliens and intergalactic beings and weird time stuff happens, and Torchwood takes care of these problems as they arrive. Imagine if like
Captain Jack, is he in Torchwood?
Captain Jack yeah. Harkness is the leader of Torchwood, and he's like, something's up with Captain Jack, he's from a different place, or he's an alien or something, I don't want to give too much away, but imagine if it's like X-Files, but it's a team, and instead of Mulder being a normal person, he sort of is someone with special powers, and that's Captain Jack. And a lot of people make
from the planet of Bo or something like that.
A lot of people make this big deal that Captain Jack's kind of like omnisexual, right? But like, I don't really care about that. So
yeah,
he's the big leader, and he'll have sex with anything. And like for me, I'm already past that point. I don't
yeah.
know.
You're post-sexual.
Post-sexual. I never have sex.
Also, last summer they had a miniseries that ran on Stars, and it was Torchwood in America, and it was called Torchwood Miracle Day, and it was sort of like the. It was really good. I didn't expect I would like it, but once I watched it, I was hooked in one of the first episodes. So hopefully that'll be coming out on DVD pretty soon. Torchwood Miracle Day.
That's not really the best name. Like, I kind of am interested, and then you gave that name, and I'm like, no, that was stupid.
Miracle
it's
Day?
Sort of like,
Miracle Day, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like Death Takes a Holiday, in which all of a sudden everybody in America
Well, I was going to ask, because I have not watched Doctor Who, so everybody gasped shockingly. Do you have to watch Doctor Who before you watch Torchwood?
No, but no. If you know things
it's probably
about...
like inside jokes and things like
yeah,
that,
yeah,
right?
If you know things about the Hooniverse, not as good as the Dooniverse, oh, dork war. if you know things about the Hooniverse, I mean, certain things kind of make sense or are more explainable. But you know what? Now I remember, I was going to say, it's very Joss Whedon-esque. In my, you know, when I read it, I'm like, did Josh Whedon write this? But it's Russell T. Davies. He did the Doctor Who reboot, too, that came out, you know, yeah. a couple years ago, too, that got really critical acclaim. All those episodes that you were talking about, like, he rebooted that show, even though he didn't write the episodes that you were talking about.
Yeah. But he wrote some, good. I don't know. I don't pay attention to who writes things. I only learned those things because I was going to talk about it today.
Sounded really smart.
Yeah, that was really good. I mean,
that's my power, is to read Wikipedia and then pretend like I've known it forever.
So I'm just going to go on record. I didn't know that the voice in the radio or something in Charlie's Angels, that was Charlie. I don't know anything about Charlie's Angels. But I said, who's the guy in Charlie's Angels? It was Charlie was the guy. And then last month, I thought that Randy Jackson was a member of the Jackson 5. So I'm never going to live that down.
But you're growing and you're learning.
Also, while Liz is here and it's my last day, I just want someone to agree with me that you are stupid for not liking Infinite Jest.
Yes.
Yep. There you go. All right.
You're wrong about Infinite Jest.
A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I didn't read it because of Brian's review, so.
But he was wrong.
Wait. What do we like to say? Yes, like, if I give something a negative review, like, you should...
My thought is if you don't like it, and, like, you really don't like it, then I'm not going anywhere near it. So it scared me.
There's this little book called, like, The Reader's Guide to Infinite Jest. It's one of these little chat books. Read that first. And I apologize to the author of that book. I don't remember his name. But the library owns that book. If you read that first, and then you read Infinite Jest, it will make... It'll be more of a...
Infinite Jest was better or worse than The Pale King?
Oh, it was worse.
Brian liked Pale King, but didn't like Infinite Jest.
See, because I was okay. I
like David Lynch's Dune, but not Frank Herbert's Dune. I'm a pervert.
David Lynch doesn't even own David Lynch's Dune.
Hey, man, these little...
He's too busy meditating.
Listen, these sick little mutant people, like, you know, in 1Q84, they're my people. I just think it's great that, like, it's Jesse's last day and we ended up talking about stuff that I like for 20 minutes.
Sorry, Jesse.
Can we do an audible high five on the air?
You're like, that's why I'm leaving. I'm tired of you.
No, I'm leaving because they're paying me more.
There you go.
That's true. It's closer to your house.
Yeah.
Hey, for more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Org?
ORG.
ORG.
Thank you.
Save the shock.
I knew there was one, but...
Okay, we're going to need to go. You ready to go?